Campbell, going to go ahead and call the meeting of November 10, 2021 for the State of Arizona Board of Podiatry Examiners at 8:30 a.m. Heather actually just completed roll call. Everyone is present. Campbell, Dr. Fenn, Dr. Alano. We have Heather Broaddus, our Executive Director, Seamus Monahan, our AAP, Dr. Polakoff is the investigator, and the guests in the community are Dr. Olson, who is here with his counsel, Mr. Whitaker, and the complainant is on the phone. I'm going to go ahead and read our statement about the meeting. Please be advised that this is a professional administrative meeting. All board members will conduct themselves in a professional manner, and it is expected that all other participants will conduct themselves in a professional manner. Combativeness, rudeness, or verbal aggression is not tolerated, and if such behavior occurs, the board chair reserves the right to limit those who may address the board. The board strives to conduct its meetings with the utmost respect for the process and for those in attendance. And number three, declaration of any conflicts of interest. Does anyone have any conflicts regarding any agenda item today? Hearing none, we will move on. We have a timed item this morning, a scheduled item. So we're going to go ahead and move on to that. That is under heading 5, items for board review, discussion of possible action. We have an informal hearing on complaint 20-27-C, Dr. Mark Olson. Board will review and discuss actions related to this. We will put this open here. The doctor, like I said, is present in the conference room as well as his attorney, Mr. Whitaker. So I will go ask both gentlemen, they can come up and have a seat here at the table. Here through the format, informal interview. So currently, it is 8:33 a.m. on November the 10th, 2021, and pursuant to the ARS 32-852.01D, this is an informal hearing regarding Dr. Mark Olson in case number 20-27-C. Dr. Olson, are you represented today by legal counsel?
Yes.
And could you please state your full name?
Mark Olson.
And Mr. Whitaker, if you would please introduce yourself, sir.
Good morning, Peter Whitaker.
Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Barbara Campbell, president of the board and also a professional member. So the other board members will now introduce themselves and indicate if they are professional or public members. So Dr. Ulano.
Albert Ulano, professional member.
Dr. Foreman.
Dr. Foreman, professional member.
Thank you so much. Again, also present is the board's executive director, Ms. Heather Broaddus, and the board's attorney, Seamus Monahan Esquire, from the Attorney General's office. You've received a notice of notice informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the process for the informal hearing and possible actions the board could take. The purpose of this informal hearing is to inquire to the facts and circumstances of the case and to decide an outcome. We have read all the materials submitted to us to date. We will hear a brief overview of the case presented by the board's investigator, and we will also ask for a summary from the complainant, and then we will interview you. If you have any questions for the board or anyone providing information during the interview, you can ask them through myself. If you prefer not to participate in the informal hearing, you may indicate so now, and the matter would be moved directly to an informal hearing. This proceeding is recorded to provide a record. So please, everyone, speak loudly and clearly, and only one person at a time. Again, those participating telephonically, when you're not speaking, please mute your phones, but then unmute them when you're speaking. Dr. Polakoff, would you please give us a summary of the case, which should also include a summary of the, call it a secondary investigation, but the updated investigation after more materials had been received by you and the board.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Campbell. This is Dr. Deidre Polakoff, and I've reviewed case 2027C on Mark Olson. A complaint was made against Dr. Olson from patient BM, who alleged that Dr. Olson did substandard care. He went to Dr. Olson for surgery on his lower leg, and after surgery, the patient had multiple complications which required additional surgery and hospitalization by another physician. The patient was seen by Dr. Olson, and after review of the complaint, approximately 2 months ago before the board, this is a summary of the board presentation. There were five allegations made from the records that were received from Dr. Olson and from the new physician taking care of Dr. Olson. The allegations against Dr. Olson were substantiated. The first allegation is abandonment of patient. The patient never received a notice of termination of his care or transfer of his care. He requested medical records while he was in the hospital and desperately needed the medical records from his infectious disease physician and internist to continue his care. The records were requested multiple times but were never received. The allegation number two was practicing surgery without concerns of post-operative risk. In review of the records, there were no items indicating why the patient was on prednisone 20 milligrams per day, and the patient, in review of the patient's records, there was no indication from the doctor in review of the medical records and of his medications that this was ever performed. The patient stated that the only time he ever was ever asked, why are you taking steroids, was after his leg started turning black. In surgery, the doctor also gave prednisone 20 milligrams and 1 cc of Kenalog 40 milligrams at the time of surgery, and the sutures were removed 13 days post-op in a very hard-to-heal area of his lower leg, which had previous surgery. This is a concern as well, and the sutures started to open up immediately after they were removed. Allegation number three also substantiated lacking substance in the medical records, which directly impacted the patient's present and future health. The medical records were lacking in review of the surgery. He did not include what kind of hardware was included. Were only the screws removed or the plate removed? Approximately how long was the incision? What about the subcuticular tissue? Was that layer not closed? He did not mention that. He did not include any intraop fluoroscopy pictures. There are many questions from the medical records that if I were a physician taking over his care, I would find them lacking. Allegation number four, failure to transfer medical records, that was substantiated. Allegation number five, billing concerns, substantiated. The patient was billed for a chronic wound care. The wound was only 3 weeks post-op. It's not chronic. Bills were submitted for 3, 4, 5, and 6 weeks post-op, which should have been included in the global post-op fee, no matter if the patient had insurance or no insurance at that time. Bills were submitted for a level 4 visit, which should have been a level 3. His records do not support a level 4 complexity. There is a lot of carryover and duplication of records. In review, the allegations were substantiated. Thank you, Dr. Campbell.
Yes, so Dr. Polakoff, does The addendum report, can you make remarks about the billing issues that, or the information that was sent back regarding coding, and if those items are in agreement to the use of the codes? Because I did also notice, and I think I mentioned this previously, that on the EOBs it does not appear that any of those wound care services were allowable charges.
In review of the post-operative bills, I do not agree with them. They all are considered in the global comprehensive fee of a post-surgical care. They are not above and beyond. The doctor chose to use those products. He could have used other products as well, but that is still on the doctor's office.
I just wanted clarification. I am also in agreement. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions at this time for Dr. Polakoff?
The only question I have is, how long did it take the notes to be sent over to the hospital from the initial request?
The initial request was not responded to. The secondary request was not responded to. According to the hospital records, they never got the notes at all.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Ulano, do you have any questions at this time for Dr. Polakoff?
Dr. Polakoff, as I understand it, Dr. Olson tried to contact the patient after, I think it was February 20th, in regards to calling him via telephonic, and it was never responded to by the complainant.
According to the patient and the witness the patient had, which was the patient's girlfriend at the time, and she was also interviewed, the only time the doctor ever responded or called or spoke to the patient was when the patient posted a negative review. Then the doctor responded almost immediately and demanded that he take down the review. And that's the only time. And the patient stated that he called multiple times, and he even used his girlfriend's phone so that in case they blocked the number, he can also call, and still no response, except when he did a negative Yelp review.
Okay, I have no further questions.
Thank you, Dr. Ulano. At this time, too, I will ask our complainant to give just summarize about 5 minutes. We have heard from you before, but just to kind of give everyone a refresher on the summary of your complaint. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Firstly, again, just want to thank the board for the diligence. I know this has become a bit of a he said, she said scenario, but I want to point out that I nor my sworn witness have anything to gain by telling anything but the truth. I'm already thousands in debt due to Dr. Olson's actions and neglect, and he himself has sent me to collections. So I'm at a standstill in my life. I can't buy a home. I can't do anything. I'm left in pain for the rest of my life. I can only tell you all my truth in hopes that action is taken and that Dr. Olson does not do this to anyone else. Everything that Dr. Polakoff has stated is true, and I appreciate that much of it has been substantiated. I just want to point out that amongst the poor record keeping and lack of standard of care and neglect, I've always looked at doctors as someone you can trust. We expect them not to lie, and we expect them to deliver care, not make fraudulent appointments and attempt to make it look like I disappeared or lie about, you know, saying that they'll remedy their mistakes free of charge. It's not true. Yeah, that's basically it. I just I just appreciate everyone's time for looking into this so well. It's after having a negative experience with a doctor, it's really reestablished faith in doctors again, and I hope that action is taken today. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
So how are things with, if I'm remembering correctly, Dr. Harrell treated you and the wound did eventually heal, correct?
Yeah, it did heal, yes, but it has opened up and bled due to the length of time that I was abandoned and left with a rotting hole in my leg. And I've talked to Dr. Harrell about it and just recently, and he suggested I go get an MRI. So this is going to continue to haunt me for the rest of my life, I believe. So that's next on my agenda. I got to go get an MRI to get this looked at again.
Thank you very much. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any further questions for BM, please?
This is Dr. Foreman. I think everything was asked for me last time, so I'm good.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Foreman.
I have no questions at this time. This is Dr. Foreman. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. So, Dr. Olson, I need you to raise your right hand, and I will be placing you under oath. Do you swear that the testimony that you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? At this time, Dr. Olson, if you'd like to make a brief opening statement, and then that will, after that, then that will open up to questions from myself and other board members. So,
do you want me to go through the case again, or? What's
the well, I think the best approach is.
Yep. Okay. The patient presented to the clinic about painful hardware in his ankle. It had been in there for a while, and it was hurting, and so we decided to take the hardware out. Pre-op was done. The hardware was removed. I don't know. Dr. Polokoff is missing a lot of information. I sent the intraoperative x-rays to you guys from Honor Health. I believe you guys received those, so there were intraoperative x-rays. So she missed that in her report. I sent them over.
They should be in the records provided by the hospital as well.
Yeah, and so the records are there, and so I don't know how she missed that. Once the hardware was removed, patient came in for a post-op visit. Everything looked good. We saw him again about a week later. The sutures were removed. I want to make a note that first post-op visit, patient did get his dressings wet. And that was in the note, and that can cause some breakdown from negligence there. The hardware was removed at that 13 days, like Dr. Polokoff said. The wound looked good, in my opinion, at that point. I noticed some slight gapping for the first time on the 9th of January. Patient went under, we were doing some wound care for him in the office. I believe I sent over some additional information about protocol and billing during the global period. It's not wrong to bill for surgical wound dehiscence and wound debridements during that period of time. I sent that over to you guys. for review. As I also sent over multiple articles about...
I'm sorry, didn't
I also sent over multiple articles about preoperative local anesthetic with steroids in them. The patient was not a contraindication for those, and I have literature to prove that. The patient's wound did get to a point where it needed further surgical debridement. We went ahead and planned for that preoperative visit. Once we were getting authorization for a further surgery, his wound and his insurance had expired. No longer covered. We made attempts to do a surgery in office. I got free wound vac for him. I got wound grafts for him. Times. Guys have those dates there, the dates that I reached out, and times he said he was going in a different direction. Records, as far as the records to the hospital, we have the request that BM signed on 2/27/2020 from Banner Health, and the hospital received the records on 2/27/2020. Received the records on the exact same day that the patient signed the paperwork. So I don't know how Dr. Polokoff missed that as well, as she's going through these records. I think I addressed most of those allegations. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, I think that's it. I'll end it.
Yeah, and most of that's in that reply that I wrote to you about the case. You know, all that's in there.
The ones that are on that one page, there's no data. Yeah. And they look like they were pre-op x-rays. Hardware. But I personally did not see any. This is back in on 15 on page 188. Those are back in 2015. Those would have been Dr. Harrell. Those were when the original injury occurred. And Dr. Harrell did the ORIF at that time. So those are all. File here starting in the page that goes on page 180.
Sorry, Dr. Campbell, I put it in the letter that I wrote for you, the op report. It specifically says the date was December 27, 2019 at 9:54
a.m. We did see that. That was that addendum that you sent, but
Lucencies.
We didn't have the actual.
Oh,
we didn't have the what like she was. Dr. Polokoff was saying there was no actual image to evaluate, just a report, but no image.
Oh, I don't think she even knew there was a report. She said there was no X-ray. And see that there is.
Well, I don't believe that was all sent at the initial thing, and that's why that had to ask, and that's why when we do investigations, those asking for a full chart means a full chart, and it's on the onus of the physician to review what's being sent over to make sure everything is in there.
From the hospital?
Yeah, even when you get it from the hospital, you ought to review.
Requesting from the hospital.
Yeah, we requested also.
Dr. Polokoff has the report. She knows the images are there because the report, and it's in the July 2021 letter from Dr. Olson, specifically quotes the radiology report from that day.
I'm aware of that, but we didn't have the actual film, the actual image to, and I think that's.
We don't have those either. Those are in the hospital chart. It was interpreted by Dr. Catherine Plett at 9:54 a.m. on December 27, 2019. Dr. Polakoff said there was no x-ray. The report is right there, so obviously to have the report, Dr. Plett must have been looking at the intraoperative x-ray. That's simply a misunderstanding by Dr. Polakoff.
And I was just, and as on back on your, who do you assign your codes, or do you have a biller that does that, that looks at your notes and then does the billing?
I have a biller that does that. I did reach out to them after this, and they still felt that those codes were correct.
Did they resubmit those? Because like I said, your EOB says they were not allowable charges. And it looked like, I was trying to see if they had, what modifiers I had used, because with the materials that you sent regarding coding, there's obviously certain protocol that has to be done. And a lot of times people actually, in order to enhance, you're gonna get paid for something that's actually within the global, you have to prove that it's a totally unrelated thing. It may not always just be complication, and send in your progress note with that to see. So that's, some of this, again, is there are a myriad of opinions out there with what can be billed for and what can't be billed for. It's always, too, is a question of good documentation to prove those, and then if the biller is going to defend and support those. So, it's not a standard of, we're not dealing with the standard of care issue here, but again, just kind of like this, in a lot of ways, this is as everyone has known, there's kind of a he said, she said. I think there's been a lot of poor communication on many parts here, and that's why we're here, is to try to ascertain what actually happened. And since
Dr. Campbell, I don't think there was a poor communication on my side.
Okay. And Dr. Olson, that's, that's one of the kind of allegations or concerns that we have here is, again, it's as he said, she said with, with the records and phone calls.
Dr. Polakoff, I have.
Yeah, I know. So that's why I'm saying, some of these things we really are kind of stuck with those, and those maybe aren't such the meat of the issues, but I think they're kind of wake-up calls to everybody involved that, communication is key, and one person's perception of something is different than somebody else's. So, those are things that I think, like I said, I think they just alert us out in practice and dealing with the public and everyone in general, that sometimes you got to double check and triple check and make sure everybody's on the same page. When you have somebody also a witness to the situation who has obviously signed sworn affidavit under possibility of perjury, that's kind of.
Where is that affidavit? Because I asked for it. All I've got is Dr. Polakoff's recitation of what the girlfriend, whose name is not identified, told him, which was that she was in every visit and every call, that there were no communications. Even those communications are clearly documented in Dr. Polakoff's contemporaneous chart. I didn't get an affidavit from the girlfriend.
Have something in the file.
There is a statement from Dr. Polakoff in her notes about her conversation with her, which are inconsistent with her.
Well, we have a lot of inconsistencies here.
It's page 79 in your materials.
Okay.
And it's possible I missed it and looked pretty carefully.
You said page 71. Oh, here it is. Okay, I'm sorry. It's just so in that I have to bring it back down to it. Yeah, signed. This is signed on May 17th.
Oh, I see the affidavit now. May I read it?
Yes, please. Take time.
I, and she gives her name, hereby swear under the law of Arizona that all information I provided to the Arizona State correct. I hereby swear under Arizona law, or law of Arizona, that all information provided by the patient to the Arizona State Board of Podiatry correct, with no recitation of what information this is. But I do have the information they provided, which, as we discussed further, is directly inconsistent with contemporaneous medical records. Back on that. Well, that we'll see how this goes, and then perhaps.
Yeah, again, Mr. Whittaker, you know, that's there is. There's a lot of he said, she said, and that's what I'm saying. You know, how do you, you know, you can't really. Like I said, people have their perceptions of what happened, what innocent, and we've got, you know, two opposing, and...
I agree with you completely.
And we aren't there, so, you know, sometimes those kind of things, you just kind of have to say, hey, wake up and let's pay attention, everybody.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And we don't go down that...
Except one thing, Your Honor, Doctor. So I have to objectively review this. I'm a trial lawyer. Mm-hmm. I go to trial, and I'm talking to a jury. They know, and I reiterate, what I tell them is not evidence. What I show them is the actual evidence. And in this case, we have the actual medical record, five allegations, where the actual contemporaneous medical records show that what he said and she said on that side is simply not accurate. Maybe they have a misperception. Maybe Dr. Polakoff didn't have a chance, even after our July 21 letter, to look back at the records. But the records are what they are. That is evidence. So if you want to know which of the he said, she said is accurate, that's why we go to the records. So for instance, one of the allegations, the abandonment complaint, well, with all due respect to Dr. Polakoff, who I do respect and I like her, but all she did was reiterate her February 15, 2021 report. She didn't go back and apparently look at the July 21, 2021 response, which is detailed from Dr. Olson. Dr. Polakoff was here for the last hearing where we went through each of these issues, but all again she did was reiterate her February report and not going back and looking at what was pointed out in July. So I have here for the board, although it was specifically cited in the record, in the Banner Health records, all right, the authorization release of the records is page 578 of 605. It's in the bottom right corner. This is in the hospital records. It's the patient's signed authorization, February 27, 2020, for Dr. Olson's records. Page 498 and the pages after that are the faxed records from Dr. Olson's office, all of them, to Banner the same day. It started coming through at 1559 on February 27th. 2020. The allegation in the investigation report is that the patient called Dr. Olson's office multiple times when the patient was in the hospital begging to have his records sent to the hospital. He was told he had to pick them up. He was admitted into the hospital, could not walk. Okay, but they never sent the records. But that's factually inaccurate. They were sent the same day the authorization was signed and the patient was in the hospital, and they're in the Banner chart. So how this allegation of abandonment and failure to provide records is substantial, even after we pointed that out in our, and I gave the page number, we gave the page number starting on page 498, showing that the records were sent to the hospital on the day the record request from the hospital was signed by the patient, February 27, 2020.
Yes, and that, well, we discussed, last time when I went through the timeline, I noted that on there. You know, the investigator is making her, you know, her opinion and going through with what she has. That's why this is part of the process that we all review this and get down to brass tacks.
Normally the situation then, we now have clear documentation that this allegation is factually inaccurate, that this should be unsubstantiated.
Well, what we have to do here is now we go through each of the these were possible violations. In order for me to move it to an informal, that's the process. You make what you are, and then that's what you're going to further investigate and talk about and ask the questions. So that was the, you know, as we go through each one of these,
okay.
and we say, okay, this is the, this is what happened here. So yes, this is something that's not, you know, you can take it off the table.
Okay, should we go to number two?
So we just did an abandonment. That's a term that people can, I think, use a little, don't use it always correctly. Abandonment means you totally break care with the patient. It's like you don't respond to them at all. And I would not put the records in that, you know, that was considered part of it. But I would, you know, that's more in the second one where there was the possible violation was failing to refuse or maintain adequate records. So it kind of those are more, that would be to me more in that category.
Well, but actually number two is practicing surgery without concerns of postoperative care.
And that's how it was written on the formal
right.
paperwork.
And we addressed that as well. So what next allegation would you like to address?
So we've discussed here now and have and looked at things that the records, getting the records is done proper because we've got the indication of on the date of 2/27/20 at, I have the same time frame here, 1554-4 or at 40 seconds, and it was page 498 that fax report was sent. So again, like I said, that, and then yeah, is that, yeah, that's what
that
I'm
failure.
Fail, yeah, failure to transfer.
That was incorporated in the report under abandonment, but
right, that's what
addition,
I said.
So if you look at the July 20, 2021 letter from Dr. Olson,
right,
on abandonment, explain further why the patient wasn't abandoned. At last office visit was on 12 on 2/12. They reached out on 2/13, informed him of the expired insurance, gave him his options. Dr. Olson secured a free wound vac from KCI as well as skin grafts from MPF. These were donated, would be at no cost to the patient. The patient called on February 18th, complaining of increase in pain, given an appointment on the 19th. The following day at 11 a.m., he canceled and advised he did not want to reschedule. And it goes on. Then the patient goes into the hospital on the 25th. The records are of February. Records are requested on the 27th and were sent on the 27th. But Dr. Olson's office, when they request for records on a phone call, Dr. Olson asked to actually be able to see the patient. Expressly advised there was would be at no charge, even though his insurance was expired. The patient stated, and this is documented contemporaneously, I am going a different route and needs all his records. They would contact him when they were ready. The next day, the office reached out to let him know that they had obtained the wound back, would be free of charge. Once again, he said, I am going another route. Didn't say he was in the hospital. Then, the next day, the office gets the request for records with the signed authorization, February 27th, and they're sent the same day. And then it goes on to discuss the additional communication Dr. Olson's office, and this all addressed the abandonment issue. And the patient was never given notice of discharge because the last time Dr. Olson had communication with the patient, it was his understanding he was still the patient's doctor. That's all under the abandonment. And actually, there's much more. So I think that addresses allegation one on abandonment. Allegation two, you want to address those separately?
Yes, sir.
Post-operative risk. Well, then, let's go back to Dr. Letter of February 21. First issue was pulling the sutures at 13 days. That was I know that was addressed at the last meeting. That is standard.
Okay, and I think one of the questions I would have, yes, you know, we were always taught in school 10 to 14 days, but I have a little, I question that. I mean, I didn't, you know, I question that because, yeah, 13 days, but the fact that the person, the patient had had a prior surgery in that area, there's not a lot of, you know, it's under a lot of tension. There's not a lot of subcutaneous tissue there. And the fact that when the sutures were taken out, that then there was a gap noticed. I believe that that is in the record, that there was a little gap noticed. Well, why not put Steri-Strips on there and additionally keep that dry for a little while longer so that you don't enlist the possibility of a dehiscence? Because with lateral ankle surgeries, particularly after, mostly after the, you know, when you have an ORAF, but now we are down the line and it's just painful hardware, but in an area that's already had other surgeries, and the fact that the patient was taking prednisone, and I know you gave the, you indicate you're giving an injection in the area, but not right in the area. Well, you know, the steroid could have the possibility of spreading, but, and I know you presented, you know, there's always pros and cons. Everybody's got different opinions on the use of steroids in areas, but that was the main concern. And I know you made a comment about when Dr. Polakoff said something about throwing a stitch in there, and I think she was probably more referring to the fact that when the sutures came out and there was evidence of something, why you couldn't have put a stitch back in, or like I just mentioned, Steri-Strips or something to enhance that site. I mean,
we all know that
you don't go throwing sutures in something that's been open for several days. You know, that's just, you don't do that. So I think that there was maybe, you know, that was where that discussion would have gone, was that there was some difference. And
I'm not medically trained, even though sometimes I sound like I am, although I've been doing this for years. My understanding is that is a judgment call that clinicians make when they are personally observing the wound. You had obviously just removed the sutures at 13. Doctor, would you like to address that issue?
When I saw the wound, I was not concerned with removing them. Yeah, I just, if I felt that they needed to be in a little longer, I would have left them in longer. That's not abnormal for me to do on occasion. Some of my diabetics, after amputation, those typically stay in 3 weeks. I was not concerned about it at that point.
Additional issue that came up under the postoperative risk was the administration of the 1 cc of Kenalog with 20 cc, 5% Marcaine. The article discusses that, and you are absolutely correct, Dr. Vinn. This comes up in almost all my cases, that one physician does it this way, another physician does it this way. They may both be reasonable. There are different schools of thought, but there was a specific article that was provided to the board regarding local anesthetics and steroids, contraindications and complications. There was the additional issue of the treatment in the office, and whether it was a sterile package. The patient's girlfriend alleged that he just pulled it out of a drawer. That's addressed specifically in the letter. So I think that addressed everything under allegation two, although.
Well, I have a question about that for the doctor. You know, it said something about that the patient had profound sensory loss, but in other parts of your documentation, you say sensations intact, no problems. So it's like, so why all of a sudden did this person have this deficiency in their sensory perception?
Don't recall that being an allegation, but.
No, it's just it goes along with this, with the debridement. That's,
Dr.
I mean,
Campbell,
I'm just, I can ask that question, but
sure,
I just want to know what.
Dr. Campbell, that was a misspelling, mistypo. He did have sensation.
Yeah, I just had wanted to know what, you know, because it just doesn't make sense to say.
Because
you know,
my
let her finish the question.
Okay, so this just goes back to issues of again, that which, you know, have been discussed too, I believe, is just, you know, charting and documentation is probably not up to, you know, up to what could be helping you, because that did come under, you know, talking about things that there were some issues with, you know, the fact that there wasn't anything in the chart about the patient being on the prednisone to begin with and stuff. So anyway, just something that caught my eye and I wanted to ask you. So again, we go back to now the next, what do you have next on your list, Mr. Whitaker?
Allegation three, the medical records. Dr. Polakoff had an issue regarding the length of the incision. Surgical wound is readily visible. If length can be easily approximated with the naked eye. Then there was a question about the hardware being removed. How many screws and how many plates, when the operative report specifically confirms that Dr. Colson removed all of the previously placed hardware. And there was the question of the x-ray. Dr. Bolikoff said there was none. The report from that day is fluoroscopy in the OR, lower extremity. The report notes that no acute fracture, ankle mortise is congruent, lucencies in the distal fibula diaphysis, thank you, consistent with previous hardware track. In other words, it confirmed all of the previously placed hardware was removed. I'm sorry if you don't have the image. We often have that problem because, of course, the board has the subpoena power. I can't subpoena records in a board complaint from a hospital, but the board does. But Dr. Polakoff, again, with all due respect, missed this contemporaneous radiographic report. She said there was no x-ray, but in fact it was there. The report is there. And often we get EMRs from a hospital, but they don't include actual radiographic images. So we have to go back and ask the hospital to provide those. I can't do that. And in all fairness, I don't think it's fair to say that it's Dr. Olson's responsibility to do that, because he can't do it either. It's no longer his patient. I don't have subpoena power. If the board wants to see the actual images, I assume they're going to be consistent with the independent radiologist report, but the board certainly has the opportunity.
Dr. Olson, do you ever, when you're in surgery, do you ever ask a technician to print you out fluoroscopy for your record?
It's needed.
And there was a question.
That was, you know, I'm just, that was always something that, you know, I thought, you know, that was a good way, because, yeah, if you didn't have, it's hard that sometimes, or they just trash it, you know, or if it's, you know, it's in there, it's in the computer system. But just another thought that I think that sometimes that's just a good way to practice medicine, to have as best documentation you can on what you're doing. So,
Dr. Campbell,
just as a food for thought there.
Dr. Campbell, Honor Health always prints them all up and has a radiologist read every x-ray.
Oh, I know. That's, yeah.
So I don't need to do that because they have that service provided for me.
But you don't want to keep a, you don't keep that, I mean, you don't want to have a,
if I need,
review with your patient to show them postoperatively, hey, this is what we did in surgery, just for education purposes, or if they have questions.
That would be, you know, up to the physician, obviously.
Yeah, right. Oh.
And in addition, we're still on allegation three, whether he applied a sterile bandage. He described his standard practice, sterile bandage, xeriform, fluffs, cling, and an ACE bandage. Don't recall ever seeing a doctor in this situation describe the specific type of bandage.
Oh.
Some may, and that's great.
Yeah, exactly. And that goes back to, I think, everybody has their own style, but, you know, in order for, you know, I like Dr. Polakoff mentioned, when somebody else picks up a chart, they need to be able to see what's going on. The way I was trained, I mean, you know, we did. Everything was detailed out about what kind of dressing you put on people. So, you know, I think a lot of that goes toward training. Sometimes you can see op reports from physicians that are so minimal. It's like, you know, yeah, the physician or the surgeon knows what they did, but, you know, in some instances, too much, you know, how do you know is what is enough to put in a chart or in a record? But still, it has to be enough that somebody else who's going to read it knows what happens. So again, that's probably pulling, you know, It's one of those things that people could argue till kingdom come.
And that's it.
What's the way to do things?
And that's a nice segue into the other thing, that allegation three that Dr. Polakoff initially raised. How did he close? Well, he noted that he closed, obviously closed. He noted that I always close all layers. I think that's the standard practice. I don't know that it's standard. Well, it's not standard of care to say I closed this layer and then I went to the next layer and I closed the most superficial layer, you know, what you do. And record keeping is great, and unfortunately I have to deal with cases for record keeping, not necessarily this one. Although I think we would all prefer, when it comes to surgery, that we have a competent, well-trained surgeon who does the surgery well, as opposed to another person who's really not a good surgeon, but a great surgeon. I'm very comfortable with the records here, and I think that addresses everything in allegation three now. And allegation four was, again, transfer of medical records, and again, request is page 578 of the authorization, signed on February 27th by the patient, in page 578 of 605, and the records were sent. They start on page 498 of 605, and they were sent beginning by fax beginning at 1559 on February 27th. And they're in the hospital chart. Has one through four been addressed? I'm sorry, would you?
It's okay.
Okay. And then the last one was the billing, which I think was addressed as well. So I know you had more, you wanted more time to ask these questions because we went through all of this the last time. So whatever time you'd like to answer any additional questions.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any comments or other questions you'd like to address?
This is Dr. Foreman. Now, when you're leaving, when you're doing most cases, you take the stitches out after 2 weeks, the sutures out?
Yes, most commonly.
Okay. And as soon as you got a written request from the hospital, your office sent over the records?
Yes, the same day.
Okay, those are the two questions I had.
Hi, Dr. Olson, Dr. Ilano. I think you made your thesis about the allegations. The only concern that I have is your the completeness or your documentation in regards to you talked about the what's wrong in the documentation in regards to the nerve, the sensation, and also the layer closing on these things. That's all I have to say.
I want to just kind of talk a little bit about the time period and the treatment of the wound. Typically, you know, if things aren't improving in, 2 to 3 to 4 weeks, you reevaluate and change. And I noticed the other physician in your office, and this is how it was documented, was, well, if you're not having any pain, we're not going to do surgery. And the wound was, you know, was quite large. So I have a little concern. I have concern about that time frame and maybe not being aggressive enough. And I know we can all go back to, you know, doctor preference, and we all have different experiences. So, you know, these are some of the other issues. So let me just a second.
I agree with you, Dr. Campbell. You know, the wound started to open up around the 9th, 10th, right?
Yeah.
And I was looking to schedule surgery about 4 weeks after that. So you're right. A few weeks, you switch things up, and that's exactly what I did.
That, you know, that way, and we all know that things can just take a left turn when you're not expecting it to take a left turn. I understand that. I mean, I'm a certified... a certified wound specialist, and I used to, you know, and it's like with diabetics, it's the same way, you know, all of a sudden things can blow up, and you're vigilant, you're watching, and sometimes it happens, and this, to me, this whole situation, there's a lot of things that occurred that aren't It's not egregious. But there are wake-up calls here. We all need them every once in a while. You got to reevaluate how you do things. When you have issues come up, you got to reevaluate and make a better plan to improve your practice. My job and the other members of this board is to protect the public. That's what we're doing. And we're here, you know, we talk about these things. We want to talk about these things because we hear, you know, everybody's got where they're coming from. So at this time, I'm going to ask my board members one more time if they have any other questions. Hearing none. Gentlemen, do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you there, Dr. Foreman. Dr. Ulano?
No, I have nothing else.
Okay, so Dr. Olson, would you like to make a closing statement? Okay. Thank you so much. Okay, at this time, this is when we deliberate or talk about things. We've done a lot of talking already, and I just want to know if my board members have any other comments they'd like to make.
This is Dr. Foreman. The only other comment, I agree with Dr. Ulano, and the documentation is the only thing I have a concern about.
Well, I'm going to... As you've heard me, you know, keep saying, we have, you know, of course, there's personal and or there's preferences physicians have in the way they're trained, what works good in their hands, et cetera, et cetera. I am going to make a motion because, like I said, that you know, the what occurred is not an egregious event. But I do think, again, like I said, this is a wake-up call for a lot of different things to reevaluate and remind our licensees of things to really be mindful of. So I am making a motion to offer a letter of concern to Dr. Olson regarding, pardon me? Okay, I'll issue a letter of concern for Dr. Olson regarding the care of the ankle ulceration because, you know, if placing somebody at risk for further complications. I would also order non-disciplinary CMEs in the area of charting and documentation 3 hours. Coding and billing 3 hours, and patient communication 3 hours. These all need to be board-approved courses, all done within 6 months of signing of the order. This is above the 25 CMEs that are done for a yearly licensure. Do I have a second? Yeah, this is all non-disciplinary.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Ulano. Discussion on the motion or on the motion for order. Dr. Ulano, Dr. Foreman, what do you think?
Could you repeat the CMEs?
Yes. On charting and documentation and for 3 hours, coding and billing, and then 3 hours on communication. Somebody needs to. I think that's a great. Did you guys hear all that?
Yes.
Okay. So, your thoughts, please.
I'm okay with that.
That's fine with me.
I didn't catch
that.
Okay. Alrighty, so we've made a motion, it's been seconded. Dr. Ulano.
Aye.
Dr. Foreman.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell. Aye. All right. Thank you very much. That concludes this interview, and Heather will be in touch, as well as Seamus, with Mr. Whittaker.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
And Heather, if you could email me that, I'd much appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, I was just, gentlemen, we're going to take, and Dr. Polakoff, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ulano, we're going to take a 5-minute recess. Thank you. A break. We had to wet our whistles. All right, so we'll move on. We have, I got to get my, we've got our minutes. We've got lots of minutes to review that now we're going to be all up to date on all our minutes. So this is under four. The first one we have is the executive session minutes, which was a telephonic meeting on 6/21/21. Does anyone have any issues with it? There's nothing I would add or any corrections I would make. Does anyone have any concerns?
No.
Okay, hearing none, I will go ahead and make a motion to accept executive session minutes from the telephonic meeting of June 21, 2021.
Second it.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Somebody's got a lot of background noise going on. It's kind of a rumbling. I don't know if it's moving about or what's going on there. Anyway, okay, so moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is executive session minutes from 7/2/21. I didn't find anything that needed to be added or corrected. Did anyone else? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the executive session minutes of 7/2/21 as written.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse me. Opposed? So moved. Next is open session minutes from 7/14/21. Again, I did not find anything that needed to be added or corrections made. Did anyone else?
No.
Thank you. Hearing, we'll go ahead then and vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? So moved. Then our next set is the open session minutes from 9/8/21. Again, I did not see any correct thing that needed to be corrected or added. Anything? Anybody else?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is open session minutes, telephone meeting of September 2021. I don't believe there anything needs to be corrected or added. Anyone else? Okay, we'll take a vote on that motion to accept the minutes as written. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Who was the second on that? I'm sorry. I don't know. Did we get it when I made the motion? I'm sorry. I didn't. Did I ask for a second?
You can put me on second.
Thank you so much, Dr. Foreman. All righty. So we move on to item 5, which we did our informal interview. So section B is the issuance of licenses. We have a Dr. Julie Doy. Her application is complete. So anybody have any concerns? All right. So hearing none, I will make a motion that Dr. Doy has applied for her regular license is complete. I will make a motion to approve her application for initial licensure and issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee. Do I have a second?
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Our second is Neelam Patel, who applied for a regular license. It's a everything is complete. Anybody have any concerns? Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve Dr. Patel's application for his initial licensure and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. So moved. The next application is Nakabas Yosfor. He has applied through Comedy. Appears the application is complete. Anybody have any concerns or questions? All right. Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve Drs. Yosfor's application and to issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. The next we'll move on to C, which is the initial application for registration to dispense drugs and devices. Our first is Dr. Jafara. It's been, the application's complete and the fee is paid. So I will make a motion to accept the initial application to dispense drugs and devices.
Seconded.
Thank you. Discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is Dr. Spencer Hardy. His application is also complete. The fee has been paid. So I will make a motion to accept the application for initial application for dispensing drugs and devices for Dr. Hardy.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. So moved. Our next is Dylan Kamaya. His application is complete and the fee is paid. Oh, I will make a motion to accept his initial application for dispensing drugs and devices.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved.
Aye.
Our next is Dr. Cole. His application is complete and fee paid. I do want to just for a just a information sake, and Heather had indicated this to me, the DEA doesn't carry the same the certificate. Now they use something called a registration verification form that shows, that's what this doctor sent to us. He didn't have the old DEA certificates like we normally see. So this is something new we're going to be seeing down the pipe. Just a little FYI. Anyway, so he's all, everything's, you know, in order for his initial registration for dispensing. So anyway.
Seconded.
Thank you. Discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Our next also is Dr. Oh boy, Adajovic. I'm sure I butchered that. Everything's in place there, fee and complete application. I will make a motion to accept this initial application for, I'm going to call him Dr. P for now so I don't butcher.
Seconded.
Do I have a second?
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Mira Panja. Her application is complete, fees paid, so I will make a motion to accept the doctor's initial registration application for drugs and devices.
Seconded.
Thank you. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Our next is Diana Perry. Also, same thing. Her application is complete and the fee is paid. So I will make a motion to accept the initial application for Dr. Perry for dispensing drugs and devices.
Second it.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you. And our final is Dr. Ryan Pinedo. Also, fees paid and application is complete. So I'll make a motion to accept the initial application for dispensing drugs and devices for Dr. Pinedo.
Second it.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So moved. Thank you. Okay. The next here we have is hang on a second. Let me scroll down here. Okay, sorry about that. We have a renewal application for Dr. Brian Broadhead. And Dr. Broadhead practices in Missouri, and he reported a malpractice on his renewal application. It's currently in process, but this is outside our jurisdiction, so we don't need to make any kind of a motion to anything on this, so like we do with our license, our licensees who practice here. So I will make a motion to accept Dr. Broadhead's renewal application. His fees, like I said, the application is complete and the fee is paid. And again, the case is outside our jurisdiction, so I will make a motion to accept the renewal application for Dr. Brian Broadhead.
Second it.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay, seven. This is review, discussion, and possible action on the adoption of a form pursuant to statute rules. So I'll have Heather's going to present that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. It's the recent legislation now requires that the board adopt a form specific for this statute. The statute has been in place for probably about 5 years in that an applicant can petition the board to review its criminal history, but has never required that the board adopt a form. So because this legislation just became effective, this form is before the board for review and approval. It's a pretty standard form that's used across multiple different boards. So I'm available to answer any questions you might have.
Heather, how far in advance do they have to fill that out? Is there a time frame or anything?
Not that I'm aware of, no. And just because an applicant were to submit this review to the board does not necessarily mean that they will be submitting an application.
Decide not to, right? Okay. Anybody have any questions for Heather on that? Okay.
Nope.
Thank you. All righty. So then the next item is, Heather.
Dr. Campbell, board members, I apologize for the interruption, but I do believe we need a motion to accept that form.
Oh, yes, I guess we do. Thank you.
We were just talking about it.
Okay, so I will go ahead then and make a motion to accept the use of the criminal history petition form.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. All right. Then the next item is the Seven, review and discussion of possible action regarding proposed rules.
I think Dr. Discount wanted to get involved with this discussion.
Well, that's really not his purview. He's can't, right?
And I guess under old business, or
as far as rules, the writing of our rules, someone in the association cannot be part of our rule writing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, I'm not directing that towards Seamus there, Dr. Foreman. Yeah. Hang on.
Okay.
That I'm not actually sure about. So why don't we continue this to the next meeting, and I'll get you an answer in the interim for that.
You asked everything.
Oh, hi, Alan Discott. Sorry, I was in the treatment room. Hi, everybody at the board. How are you today?
Good.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Dr. Andrews is kind of tied up, and I'm on the radiology committee with
you,
him.
We didn't have you, Alan. I mean, sorry, Dr. Discount. We did not have you on the agenda for part of this discussion. That was not set.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know who assumed that, but that did not happen. This is supposed to be review for rewriting. You know, we have to, with the rules, because of our new statutes, as per the governor, we have to remove so many old rules in order to add in our new rules, and that was what we were going to be discussing today.
So,
but,
yeah,
so your discussion that you're wanting to have has not even been agendized. So, that's going to occur at a future meeting, and you will be noticed about that.
Okay, great. My apologies. I didn't mean to.
Yes, that was, I don't know where that came up from, who decided, you know, but that's not what's going on today.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to waste the board's time.
You guys will be, that's part of some of our discussion today is get, you know, we have to move through this process and be reminded that rules take a long time. That, you know, it's kind of premature right now for that part of the discussion, because this is government moves slow, so it's going to take some time. So we're not going to forget. Don't be worrying about that. So, okay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. So we'll go back to the actual. Hang on a second. So this is Heather's presentation. This is Heather's work here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. And as Dr. Campbell just stated, I did remove several rules so that we could create rules for podiatric medical assistance specifically. So that's what's before you to review today is to see if the board agrees with the rules that I eliminated. A lot of the rules that I eliminated have to do with the questions involved in the application and on the renewal. And instead of having specific questions, there's language that just states a board approved by the form approved by the board. The other, but besides the section regarding podiatric medical assistance, I did add a fee for the telehealth registration application, and that is also new legislation that just became effective this year. I went ahead and put a fee in for that. The overarching statute does allow boards to charge a fee. And the podiatric medical assistant, I did add a new article for that and two different sections. And that is on page, let me get there. Page 1358 of your materials. So the board can add language, modify it, eliminate. Any corrections or modifications the board has, I would just ask that you provide me the language and then I could bring it back to a future meeting, or the board could approve these draft rules today. Once we have a draft of the rules that the board has approved, then the next step is for me to send this to the governor's office to request an exemption from the rulemaking moratorium. So again, as Dr. Campbell stated, this can be a very long process. The board might remember just not too long ago, we went through the rulemaking process and it took almost a year for the governor's office to approve the exemption request. So I'm available to answer any questions.
Now, Heather, do you want each one of us to submit to you in email any recommendations we might have, if or unless, as you indicated, if everyone is in agreement today with the changes that you have presented today? Because I have a couple questions, if you prefer, in lieu of time, that, you know, that it's done that way and then brought back again to the board next month.
Madam Chair, I would leave that up to the board. If the board wants to discuss it today, I am more than happy to do that. Or if the board would prefer just to send me an email with proposed changes, modifications, or additions, that would be up to the board.
Well, we have to vote on this.
What's your opinions?
I say we do it today.
Okay. Well, then I have just a couple questions that I, you know, the changes that were taken out are great. It really thins this out. And, you know, the fact that saying that the questions are approved by the board, that each one of those questions doesn't have to be listed, certainly is nice to debunk all this. Okay, this is under Article 4. It's a definite. Actually, I'm so sorry. That was my bad. My mistake. Refers to the American APA. It should be the wording should be the American Podiatric Medical Association. It's not the American Podiatric Medical Association. I don't know if it changed. If that's anything that's pertinent, or if that would be. Yeah, it's on number 4 under Article 1 definition. That says American Podiatry Association. That should actually be American Podiatric Medical Association. Is that hard to...
Madam Chair, I will take a look at that. I don't, if it's just a minor change, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So council means the Council of
Podiatric Medical Education. That's CPME, which is the one who approves. Continuing education is what.
So an organization approved by the American...
Podiatric Medical Association approves the Podiatric Medical...
So it's the American Podiatric Medical Association. Instead of Podiatry Association.
Yeah, that's how we're known. That's how they're known. So on number 24 under that definitions, the medical record has the same meaning as in ARS 12-2291. So that language is apparent in there, so removing it from here, it's still listed, so people should understand what medical record. I mean, a doctor should understand what medical record.
And Madam Chair, board members, I did take out quite a few definitions that referred to overarching state statutes.
Okay, that's what I figured. I just wanted to. Okay. Same thing, yeah, with the substantive policy statement. On the fees, this is R425-103. remind me, is there a fee for the volunteer health services?
Madam Chair, board members, I was not with this board when that was implemented, but I do remember a previous discussion by the board when it was implementing its temporary license application, and that the board determined at the time not to charge a fee for that because it was a volunteer basis.
Okay. Thank you, because I was thinking, did we have to add this on there? But I couldn't remember if we, what that out, I couldn't find anything to jar my memory on that. Okay. That's every 2 years and all that. Okay, then under Article 3 licenses, when it talks about the passport size photo, you know, I know we had a couple recent applications from some new applicants that looked like they were sending something they took with their cell phone. And I can tell you, many, many years ago when I first started on the, well, when I first started on board, one of the doctors sent a picture of himself in his hiking gear. So I still think maybe we need a little something that says, maybe just saying a professional photograph or a professional appearing photo, something so that we don't get a bunch of unprofessional-looking photos.
Professional attire?
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I wouldn't do that because you'd have to define what professional is.
Oh, okay.
What I do know is that when I applied to the Arizona Bar Association, they asked for a passport-size photo that only showed your shoulders and head.
Oh.
And, Madam Chair, board members, In talking with, there are several boards who are going through a full audit right now. So, and in talking with one of my colleagues, the Auditor General's office is being very picky with her applications as to whether or not the photographs are 1.5 by 2 inches. And they're giving her a lot of pushback because she's accepting photographs that are larger than that. So that's the reason I took out that part, but I have no problem leaving in 2 passport-type photographs.
I think, yeah, because that's very general, very non-committal, not going to mm-hmm. make anybody crazy.
Mm-hmm. And just taking out the size.
Yeah, passport, just like Seamus said, it's
okay.
It's a box. So that would be, the size, that's, you know, it's like a reiteration of what a passport size is. Yeah, could we just leave in passport type?
Yep. Yes, I will do that. Thank you.
And it's the same. There is the same on the application by comedy. Uses the same term on number 3. R-425-3. And I on R-425-306 on their license renewal. The attestation of their attendance at their CMEs, that's definitely good. Because, to remind me, Heather, that's part of on the e-licensing form. Everybody downloads their certificates anyway. But isn't there something that we sign on? I'm trying to remember. There's something that we know on there that we did. Kind of an attestation. Attesting to you've done those, or it's just the pure fact that you send in those certificates?
And with the e-license platform, there is that signature space. I have ran into situations where a licensee can skip that section, but they're supposed to be attesting to it when they upload documentation to the e-license platform.
But otherwise, I think it's great. Wow, that's, you know, we ought to be able to just really have good statute and good rules for all our statutory changes. Dr. Ilana or Dr. Foreman, do you have any other comments?
No, they look great. Great job, Heather.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so if there's no further discussion on that, I will make a motion to accept the proposed
and to direct me to send it to the board.
that Heather has proposed and we have reviewed. And yes, and to transmit. Do I have a second, please?
Second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you. Okay, cool.
And Madam Chair, board members, again, sorry to interrupt, but before we continue, can we go back to the calendar? I just want to make sure that that doesn't miss under, it was under section 5, agenda item 5, number D, or letter D.
Board meeting calendar under letter D.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I did. I just skipped right back there. So we'll go back to D under heading 5, which is in regards to the calendar for our board meetings in year 2021-2022. Heather has presented that to us in our packet, and she did write up on it. It is 2022, even though the dates are showing 2021. No, we are not going to repeat last year. So I will make a motion to accept the calendar for the board meetings of the year 2022. All in board
seconded.
C. Thank you. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. Our next is a review. This is number 8, Assistant Attorney General's update regarding recent legislation, legal memo.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. And Dr. Campbell, board members, this is Seamus Monahan, Assistant Attorney General. And I am just going to kind of go through and touch these real lightly and provide you a summary. And if you have any questions, legal questions on them, you can always reach out to me separately. But the first one is SB 1063, which expanded the ability to accept to request a de novo trial from the board. So if we have a formal hearing or a rehearing, and we deny it and they appeal, the respondent can now choose to have a complete new trial with new evidence and new testimony. We don't know how that looks. The courts are just now getting it and trying to figure out what to do with it. So that at this point, I don't have anything really to add to that. The technology plans, not a big deal. Occupational professional and licensure notice, it's just the universal licensure notice now needs to be prominently put on the board's website. There's a legislative review, so they changed up the way that they will review the agencies just a little bit. That really doesn't have much to do with us, though, at this point. We are a health board, so non-health board directors' legislative advocacy does not relate to us. Posting board actions, this is a new one. This does relate to us, and basically it changes the dates for which you can post disciplinary action that the board has taken. It used to be that you would just keep them up there. Now you have to remove them after 5 years. Criminal conviction set aside. This is kind of in line with the petition for criminal history review. The governor did pass a law that, you know, if you're granted a certificate of second chance after a conviction has been set aside, that the board has to change the way that it looks at those previous convictions. Again, this will probably not be an issue for us, but if it does, I'll address it when it comes up. Undesignated offenses, misdemeanor status, and the exception. That goes into effect July 1st, 2022, and that does have the chance of affecting us. It just requires that Class 6 undesignated felonies that do not involve a dangerous offense to be treated as misdemeanors instead of felonies, with certain exceptions not applying to issuance or maintaining a license. So the next one would be relating to attorney's fees and appealable agency actions. That really doesn't have much to do with us either. There's a lot going on there, but it really just expands the scope of what's an appealable agency action. And so now denying an application is now an appealable agency action. License denial, prohibition, drug convictions. This goes in line with the citizens prop that legalized recreational marijuana. It may affect us. I guess we'll find out later. It depends on what the charge was and how long ago it was. But again, we can talk about that if they come up. Petitions, definition of moral turpitude, and petition for review of criminal record. The most important thing about this one is that it changes the petition for review in a way that it makes it a little bit more challenging for the boards. They just have to look at different things when they're deciding if they want to deny somebody a license based on their criminal record. But moral turpitude is the important part. The definition of moral turpitude was changed. And certain things were taken out of it, and now it's just an offense, whether a misdemeanor or felony, that is related to extortion, burglary, larceny, bribery, embezzlement, robbery, racketeering, money laundering, forgery, fraud, murder, voluntary manslaughter, or a sexual offense that requires the individual to register pursuant to Section 133821. So it does drastically limit what was previously considered a crime of moral turpitude. And that's it.
Thank you, Seamus.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have any questions for Seamus? So we'll move on here to 9, which is a review of the update from the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards. So on November the 5th, Heather and myself attended the Zoom meeting for the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards. It was our fall seminar. The meeting was divided into two sections. The first, now this is for, we have 50 member boards. Every state is a member board, podiatric medical board is a member. We also have membership, and now we have the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and we just added, Virgin Islands just came on board, and we also have an affiliate member from College of Physicians and Surgeons in British Columbia. Anyway, so the main things we went over, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with the white paper and the joint task force, and the AMA resolution that came out this summer, and the discussions that have been flying all over the place, that was reviewed. And we had, prior to the meeting, the Federation Board had sent out request, that this would be part of the discussion, and wanted comments from member boards. So that was it was a good discussion as to what had happened with this white paper. And basically, we're pushing to have podiatrists be able to take the USMLE exam to gain, their idea was gaining, parity with MDs. Well, it's basically, I will say, has backfired on them. Anyway, and part of that knowledge was that the Federation of State Medical Boards, of which the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards, we are a member, and we received a letter from licensing with the MDs and DOs that this was not feasible because it's written in the contract that only MDs and DOs can take the USMLE. So that's kind of now dead in the water. So then we went on to the round robin discussion, which was quite good. A lot of discussion regarding scopes of practice throughout the country modernization of practice and how it affects scope of practice, talking about use of MAs and PAs in podiatry practices, issues boards have with CMEs, filling board vacancies was one of the topics we discussed, and again, lots about board compositions and how complaints are handled and adjudicated. So it's quite a good discussion, and it's a nice way that state boards can kind of pick each other's brains and help each other with problems and stuff. So, and I will also tell you from the Federation, I had, as the president of the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards, my executive director, Russ Stoner, and I were on a phone call Monday with a lady, Dr. Curry, who comes from Canada, who the APMA has decided, has hired and sent a lot of questions on, you know, how, what has occurred. Now the APMA, you know, wants to do something after the horse is out of the barn, so to speak, and, you know, backpedaling. So anyway, we had a discussion about how things can move forward, and they're talking to 22 different stakeholders. There will be a report that eventually comes out. So if you are so inclined, go on. You can follow all this on the Federation website, which is www.fpmb.org, and keep, you know, kind of keep yourself abreast of that. I don't know if Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ulano, if you've heard much talk amongst colleagues about their feeling about the white paper and the AMA resolution, but like I said, right now it's pretty much dead in the water, as was. So were you guys very aware of it or anything?
I'm aware of it. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but
yeah, right. But upon, I'm just,
yeah.
Well, the APMA didn't do their due diligence and think things through. So this is where. But you know, like I said, all that. If you're so interested in the information, that's a good place to go get it. So that's the end of what I have to say about that. So. Next is Heather's executive report under 10.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Regarding the board member composition, we currently have two public member vacancies. I have been in contact with the governor's office, with the director of boards and commissions, and I was advised that they're working on appointing public members for all boards. I did contact her again early this week, and I have not gotten a response back from her. I am aware that at least one person has applied, and I did get an inquiry from another person and just referred them to the governor's office. But I'm not a part of that process at all. I don't know if people are applying unless they contact me first. So it's always good if I am aware, that way I can follow up with the governor's office. And as Seamus stated in his summary of recent legislation, we are now required to remove certain documents from our website that are more than 5 years old. So I've done that. We should be in compliance with that new law. And a lot of the boards have been thinking about now that e-license contract is essentially over with Salesforce, a lot of the boards that are on Salesforce are migrating over to Thentia. Psychology has successfully migrated. It's been very recent, so I haven't had a chance to talk with anybody over there to see how they like the platform, but there's been a lot of good feedback from other states that use that platform. And I'm inclined to go ahead and move forward with that, partly because of costs. It's less than half the cost of Salesforce. Plus, it's a platform that is built specifically for a regulatory agency. Salesforce is not built specifically for a regulatory agency. So I did speak with the board's OSPB analyst, and she will be submitting an appropriation, additional appropriation request for FY 2023, which begins July 1st, right in the middle of our renewal cycle. So my plan would be to, once we have those funds, to not migrate over until after the renewal cycle is over, so probably September of next year. And that will give me plenty of time, too, to see how other boards like that platform. I do have a quick update on the laptops. There was an issue with the prior vendor that I placed the order with back in May. And, you know, during that three-month transition that the board had where I wasn't here, I'm not sure, you know, if any follow-up was done, but then in October, I did follow up with the vendor. The order was never placed. There was a problem with them no longer being on state contract. Anyways, I have it taken care of, and the laptops are on order. They should be here hopefully within a few months. I'll be following up with the vendor, and I'll keep the board apprised of that. I did submit the current budget summary, and there's been no new complaints added to the complaint log that was submitted with the materials, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Heather? All right, so any next we have here is 11, summary of any current events. Okay. And 12 is our call to the public, making a call, but we have no public in the audience. Next is 8, the discussion of possible action items for future agenda items. We've received questions regarding hyperbaric oxygen and people wanting to questions regarding DPM ability to supervise HBO treatments. And so we have some information that I think this is something certainly that I would like to see put on a future meeting agenda for discussion.
And Madam Chair, board members, the soonest that we would hear that would be the December meeting, possibly the January meeting.
That's fine. I mean, it's not of something that's super urgent here.
And a future item will be, again, the rule process.
Right.
And I will let the board know where we're at with the governor's office. I'll follow up them at least monthly to see where we're at with that exemption request.
And regarding that, too, now that with our surprise with Dr. Discount being on the phone and wanting to be, because what the process is now is that what we're striking, that has to be done first. In addition to, well, we have our verbiage. What, you know, one of my thoughts was, as far as involvement with the state association, was at some point in time to have a discussion with, you know, Dr. Andrews had actually sent Heather sample questions from the ASPAMA's examination and then the previous examination that was, you know, as reference for people to see. So I think that would be something else that, you know, as part of the agenda for whenever we do, you know, whenever we can agendize it, to send that information to board members so that they could review and see those. But I also think it would behoove in writing a letter to the state association and indicating, you know, Dr. Andrews forwarded this. Have you vetted or have you queried the membership in the state association to see what they think of those test questions? Are those adequate for medical assistants to be proficient in doing x-rays and being assistants? So that would be, you know, if that's something that we send at some point to them to get their input that way, because they actually, you know, because then we have to make a motion to, as part, to accept the ASPMA, right, as far as their coursework and their, for the assistance and for the x-ray course, or we just say because of the way our statute reads, board approved. So do we have to do that at this, you know, time? Am I making sense?
Madam Chair, board members, and Seamus, I apologize. We may be getting off topic, so. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But like I said, that's certainly something that we, let's just put it on an agenda item for another meeting.
And Madam Chair, board members, if I may, I did believe that I included that in the draft rules that I submitted that were reviewed and approved today.
Oh, okay. I must have.
Mm-hmm. Accredited by the American Society of Podiatric Medical Assistants.
Okay.
So I don't believe you
need we're okay.
Another motion. Okay. Okay.
Just want to make sure all my eyes are. Okay. Sorry about my rambling there. Okay. Okay. All righty. So future minutes, future meetings with the HBO and that's hyperbaric oxygen, not television, and the rules updates, where we are with rules. Anything else anybody would like to see discussed at a future meeting? All right. So our next meeting will be December the 8th, 2021. And I'm making last call for any comments or issues.
Madam Chair, board members, just a reminder, board office is closed tomorrow in observance of Veterans Day.
Yes, that's right. All righty. So at 10:30, I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting of the State of Arizona Board of Podiatry Examiners of November 10, 2021.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you. You guys all have a nice Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.